طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Welcome to another edition of This Week in Palestine, a weekly show hosted for many years by our beloved Sharif Fahm and continued in his loving memory by a group of his dedicated friends. Every week, This Week in Palestine brings you news and views from a decidedly Palestinian perspective, a perspective seldom heard in the United States. Before we get to our feature presentation this morning, there are disturbing reports out of Syria concerning the massive Palestinian refugee camp Yarmouk. The suffering in Syria due to the civil war is staggering, and none more than what the Yarmouk refugees are facing. Here is a report from the news service Mondo Weiss. As Islamic State forces invade and take over 90% of Yarmouk camp in Syria, residents of the camp reach out to the world, pleading for their voices to be heard. They are demanding that the Palestinian Liberation Organization and humanitarian organizations such as the Red Cross and UNRWA act in order to secure a safe passage to save the remaining 18,000 residents in the camp. Yarmouk camp once was hailed as the capital of the Palestinian diaspora, with over 160,000 Palestinians in the camp. In December 2012, the Syrian regime began imposing a siege on the camp, which has resulted in the direct death of 200 Palestinians. In addition to that, over 1,000 were killed due to the continuous shelling attacks on the camp and torture in regime jails. To add on to the siege, which has lasted over 700 days, residents in Yarmouk are now struggling to survive in the face of assaults by ISIS forces and their allies. H, whose name is changed due to security reasons, has been speaking about the situation of the camp, asking for outside assistance since the imposition of the siege, one that was perpetuated by the Syrian regime, its allies in the camp, and the silence from the international community. He now records his sentiments through Facebook statuses, as they range from cynicism to despair to conveying to the outside community his situation and that of those surrounding him from the camp. After the invasion by ISIS, many individuals began making efforts to mobilize in order to highlight the plight of Yarmouk and the imminent danger surrounding it in attempts to stop another massacre from happening. As the camp called on the international community and the Palestinian Liberation Organization ad infinitum to intervene when the regime-implemented siege began, they were met with little mobilization and a piercing silence. Today, they endure yet another travesty as ISIS forces take over the camp and Jabhat al-Nusra assists in the onslaught. On April 4th, PLO Executive Director member Dr. Saeb Erekat released a statement calling upon the United Nations, International Committee of the Red Cross, and the Syrian government to secure an evacuation of the civilians in the camp. The statement concludes, quote, "In the meantime, the tragedy unfolding in Yarmouk shall remain a testament to the collective human failure of protecting civilians in times of war," unquote. The PLO must take a stronger stance in Yarmouk and engage in active talks with all the organizations responsible to ensure the safety of those who remain within the camp. The UN Relief and Works Agency, UNRWA, and the Red Cross also have a duty towards the residents of the camp, most of whom are refugees. The camp is gone, but the lives remain. They are not numbers, and it is our duty to work through any means possible to ensure their safety. In one of his more recent posts, H speaks with a tone of despair. Yarmouk is dying now. It is being depleted. be the voice of Yarmouk. On today's show, we feature an interview with Charlotte Cates, coordinator of the Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, courtesy of the Canadian broadcast Voice of Palestine, hosted by Hannah Kawas. In this interview, Cates talks about the work of Samadun and the conditions of Palestinian political prisoners, including the case of Lina Khatab, a young 18-year-old media student at Beerzeit University, and a folkloric dancer with the dance troupe El Funon. Lina was recently sentenced to 6 months in prison on charges of throwing stones and participating in an unlawful demonstration. This Voice of Palestine interview was originally broadcast on February 20th, 2015.
Welcome to another edition of the Voice of Palestine, Voice of the Palestinian People. It's February 20th, 2015, and I'm your co-host, Hanna Kawas. This week we are talking with Charlotte Cates, the coordinator of Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network. We will talk with her about the work of Samadun and specifically the case of Lina Khatab, an 18-year-old Palestinian media student at Beerzeit University and folkloric dancer with Al Funun Al Sha'biyyah, who was sentenced by an Israeli military court at Ofer to 6 months imprisonment on the 16th of February after the court convicted her on charges of throwing stones, quote-unquote, and participating in an unlawful demonstration, quote-unquote. Good evening to you, Charlotte, and welcome again to the Voice of Palestine.
Good evening, Hannah, and thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to join you on the Voice of Palestine.
Could you, you know, to start with, give us a bit of background about Samadun? It's doing really good work recently, and I'm following the website. It's really a great way of giving the message to the world about what's the inhuman conditions that the Palestinian prisoners are going through. Could you give us our listeners a bit of background about Samadun and what kind of work you do?
Sure. Well, Samadun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network is an advocacy network to build international support and solidarity for Palestinian political prisoners, over 6,500 Palestinian political prisoners inside Israeli jails. The struggle of Palestinian prisoners for freedom and liberation is a huge part of the Palestinian struggle itself. Nearly every Palestinian family is touched in some way by mass incarceration, by imprisonment, by raids and arrests and attacks on towns and villages and cities. And this experience of imprisonment, you know, 40% of Palestinian men in the West Bank and Gaza have been imprisoned in Israeli jails. The ubiquity of this experience in the Palestinian struggle and the centrality of the struggle of Palestinian prisoners is something that doesn't necessarily receive the amount of international attention that it needs. And as the movement with international solidarity with Palestine is growing, Samadun exists to share information, build support, share information among Palestine solidarity groups, and organize campaigns to demand freedom and liberation for all Palestinian political prisoners. We also share information about U.S. political prisoners, Canadian political prisoners, and the cases of Palestinian political prisoners outside Palestine as well.
Of special interest in the U.S., for example, and France, you did some work there. Could you tell us a bit briefly about these cases?
Sure. Well, Samadun, and you can see more of our work at our website, Samadun, IDOUN.ca.
Yeah.
You know, we started it in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important that we talk about the cases of political prisoners in North America. So this includes, you know, cases in the U.S., like those of Mumia Abu-Jamal or Leonard Peltier, of black freedom fighters who have been imprisoned, as well as, of course, Palestinians in the United States who have been targeted for their community activism and organizing.
Yeah.
One of the most important cases that's happening in the United States right now is the case of Rasmia Oda. Rasmia is a woman who has spent her entire life working for Palestine and working for her community and connecting with Palestinian women.
Mm-hmm.
She herself was a Palestinian political prisoner in Israeli jails, she was tortured horribly, and she suffered sexual violence and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And her story actually became famous around the world. She testified before the United Nations. The story of what happened to Rasmia was, you know, covered in international newspapers before her release.
Mm-hmm.
And after she left Israeli prison, and after she built a career and a life in Jordan, she traveled to the United States. And when Rasmia came to the United States, she works with an organization called the Arab American Action Network in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's there that she built a community called the Arab Women's Committee, which was focused on organizing and building mutual solidarity and strength and support among grassroots Arab women, hundreds of Arab women, especially Palestinian women in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening to Rasmia right now is that she's facing potential deportation and 10 years in prison because she was charged with unlawful procurement of naturalization. And the government is, the U.S. government is pursuing these charges against her as part of a political and legal campaign that's been targeting Palestinian and solidarity activists in the Chicago area. Unfortunately, Rasmia was convicted in late 2014. And in next month, on March 12th, she'll be facing sentencing. Her lawyers plan to appeal immediately. Rasmia is determined to fight this unjust repression until the end. But it's very important to build solidarity and support for Rasmia's case right now.
Yeah.
There's actually a website called Justice 4 with the number 4, Rasmia.org, that has information,
mm-hmm.
especially about Rasmia's case. You can go there. You can find information about Rasmia's website on samadoon.ca. All of this is really important. The campaign for Rasmia is working to build support for her. Again, this is a woman who's 67 years old and who's given her life to support Palestinians in her community, and she's facing U.S. government prosecution because of it,
yeah.
and targeting her as a former Palestinian political prisoner and a victim of sexual torture and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So Rasmia is someone who's been a Palestinian political prisoner for her work on Palestine in both Israeli and U.S. jails.
Yeah. And there is...
And, of course...
Yeah, there is really lots of details on Sami Doon about her also. I see lots of articles. So if people want to learn more about her case, please go to samidoon.ca, and there is more details. Did you want to say more about it? Sorry if I interrupted.
No, just to note that Rasmia's case is far from the only case
mm-hmm.
in the United States. There's also the cases of the Holy Land Five, five men who are serving up to 65 years in prison for fundraising for Palestine and sending money to the same organizations that USAID was sending money to.
Yeah.
And, of course, in France, there's the case of George Ibrahim Abdallah, who is a Lebanese Arab struggler for Palestine who has now spent over 30 years in French prison.
Mm-hmm.
He's eligible for parole. He's been eligible for parole for years. He's even been granted parole on multiple occasions, only to be denied the ability to leave France to Lebanon and thus remained in prison because the French state, along with the United States and Israel, want to keep him in prison. And again, there's more information on his case on Samadoun as well.
Yeah. And also, let's not forget about the case of Larian, who just been deported to Turkey just a week or two ago. And he stayed, I believe, over 15 years in American U.S. jail under the suspicion of raising, or the accusation of raising funds to Hamas, which is a part of the resistance movement in Palestine. But that shows, you know, where the U.S. and here in Canada, we facing the new bill that will criminalize any support for the BDS. So we having it coming here to Canada, but I don't think they're going to. And the purpose of it is to intimidate people and stop people from doing support work for Palestine, whether through the BDS movement or through the Solidarity movement in general. So, yeah, that's...
Absolutely.
Yeah,
the state repression that's being directed and threats being directed at the BDS movement by Canadian public officials at the same time that they're introducing, Bill C-51 to raise the level of what can be considered prosecutable, quote-unquote, support for terrorism. These, of course, are very dangerous measures to attack the Palestinian community and supporters of Palestine. But as you said, it's so important to keep being active and keep raising, keep raising voices and refuse to be silent, because that's the purpose of this kind of legislation. That's the purpose of these kind of attacks, is an attempt to suppress Palestinian communities, an attempt to suppress the growing solidarity movement with Palestine.
Yeah, and it's, it's very clear also through the signing of the memorandum between Israel and Canada to target BDS supporters and supporters of the Palestinian struggle and labeling them as anti-Semites. It's really clear there that Canada is in bed and in cahoots with Israeli war crimes and in Israeli repression of the not just the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, but against the Palestinian people in general. So, yeah, I think there is lots of information there about this situation here, but it's important to strike back, and I think this is what we did here in Vancouver. We called for a general boycott against Air Canada, which is the main institution here in Canada, to show them that we're not scared of their bills or their memorandums with Israel, and we're going to fight back and expose all those who are complicit in Israeli war crimes and apartheid. And we having the Apartheid Week all over the world coming up, so we ask people to join it. I want to go back, if you allow me, Charlotte, to the situation with the Palestinian prisoners, and specifically with Lina Khattab, and if you could give us a bit of background information about what happened to her. We introduced it in our intro, but it'll be appreciated if you give us some overview of what happened to Lina.
Absolutely. Well, Lina Khattab is a first-year media student at Birzeit University. She's 18 years old. She's a dancer with a Sinan popular Palestinian dance troupe, which is a world-renowned traditional Palestinian Debka troupe that performs internationally. And she participated on December 13th, 2014, in a student protest marching but near Ofer prison, calling for the release of Palestinian political prisoners. And while she was participating in this demonstration, she was grabbed by Israeli soldiers, and she was, slammed into a jeep, and she was arrested and taken away. And when she was, she was held for several days in interrogation, they were blasting cold air on her. She was slapped. She was cursed at by Israeli soldiers. And she was, you know, repeatedly questioned, and they were demanding that she confess to a whole range of things regarding her participation in the demonstration. And she refused to do so, and she didn't confess. And the only so-called evidence against her that was presented in the military court was the word of the three Israeli soldiers who arrested her, the three Israeli military police. Now, of course, this is not uncommon. Israeli military courts are not a space for justice or a justice system for Palestinians. Israeli military courts convict 99.74% of the Palestinians who come before them. This is not a neutral system. Israeli military courts are a mechanism for maintaining the occupation of Palestine, for suppressing Palestinian resistance, and for criminalizing not just Palestinian resistance, but really Palestinian existence on the land. That's the purpose of these military courts. They're not a neutral justice system. And of course we know that there are no neutral justice systems, but the Israeli military courts are about as far as one can get from any such system. Now, while she was going through the military court system, she would have a court date scheduled, you know, once a week, another week, another week. And every week she would be brought to court. She would be taken in a freezing cold vehicle, chained to a chair, driven hours to the military court, only to be told your hearing is postponed and sent back to prison again. She was repeatedly denied bail. She was denied any form of seeing her family. She was denied family visits, even when she was in the court and her parents were in the court as well. Her mother was forbidden from even hugging her or touching her. And what was she charged with? What was the crime that she was allegedly charged with? Was participating in an unlawful demonstration. Because under Israeli military orders, every demonstration in Palestine that hasn't been specifically permitted by the Israeli military, by the occupying power, is allegedly unlawful, when of course in reality it's the occupation itself that's unlawful. Yeah. And she was also charged with throwing stones, and throwing stones is a charge that the Israeli military uses frequently and arbitrarily against Palestinians who are at popular demonstrations against the occupation. And what we've seen is an increase in these throwing stones type of charges. So in late 2014, we've seen legislation being passed to, you know, say that, oh, you could potentially serve 20 years in prison for throwing stones. And then we see 14, 15, 16-year-old children being brought before Israeli military courts. Most of the time, what they're being charged with is, once again, throwing stones. So this is, you know, really a tool that's being used by the Israeli military to imprison particularly Palestinian children and youth. And what we've also seen in Lima's case, and this was pointed out by Sahar Francis, the executive director of Edomir, Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association in Ramallah, that the fact that Lima was being denied bail, the fact that Lima was being prohibited any kind of family visits, and that this was being done to a young woman specifically, but this is really an attempt to try to shut down student organizing, to frighten other young women students from participating in and speaking at and leading protests and demonstrations. So finally, you know, after eight of these endless delayed court hearings, Lima was convicted in this kangaroo court of throwing stones and participating in an unlawful demonstration, and she was given a 6-month prison sentence.
Yeah.
And there's a growing call around the world, you know, to demand Lima's release, even now that she's convicted, because once again, these military courts have to be exposed for what they are.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a convicted or tried Palestinian political prisoner.
Yeah, and bombing Gaza and killing people is not a crime, but resisting occupation is. I just like to read the Israeli Defense Forces order number 101 to our listeners. It states, a person who organizes a procession, assembly, or vigil without a permit shall be liable for imprisonment for 10 years, end of quote. So, in addition to the 20 years for throwing stone, even if you have a public, peaceful public demonstration against occupation, you are liable to get 10 years imprisonment in the kangaroo court of the only democracy, quote unquote, in the Middle East, So, it's really
absolutely.
It's really something, that the Canadian government shares the common values they share with Israel, and they copycat what they're doing, whether at the airports or whether through the police force or whether through the memorandum of how to suppress dissent. So, I also want to give you some chance to see how people can really support the campaign to free Lena.
Sure. Well, what we are doing right now is working to mobilize as much international support and attention on her case as possible. There have been a growing number of articles about her case since she's been convicted, since she's been imprisoned, but it's only with, increasing global pressure that there's going to be not just the chance to free Lena, but to push back on what is very clearly an Israeli attack on the Palestinian student movement. There are organizations and individuals around the world have taken photos of themselves and their organizations with signs saying Free Nina Khattab. There's a video of talking about her case and showing the international solidarity that's been building on her case. And on Facebook, that video has been viewed over 8,000 times now. There's also a YouTube version of the video that's been viewed hundreds of times. There's a union of students in France that's issuing a statement of support for her. There have been students on campuses across the United States getting involved, taking action, signing petitions. We have, an online action on our website. There's also a link to an online petition that people can sign to draw the attention of the United Nations. And of course, we think it's really important to bring the information about Lena and the message about freeing Lena to actions and protests and demonstrations, to protest at Israeli consulates, to, be outside Israeli embassies, to speak out whenever there are ambassadors and representatives for this apartheid war criminal state in your area, and say, we're demanding freedom for Palestine, and part of freedom for Palestine is freedom for Palestinian political prisoners, including Nima Khattab. And we have posters and flyers that you or your group can download on our website and share them with people in your own communities. Yeah. And the call has been translated into Italian, into Spanish, into French. Mm. There's really growing international support and attention to this case.
Yeah. And also for these Facebook users, there is also a free Lena Khattab Facebook page, so we encourage people to put a like there. Am I correct? There is such a page?
Yeah. Yes, there's a Free Lena Khattab Facebook page. It's facebook.com/FreeLena, LINA. And thousands of people have been signing on to the page. We're posting actions, news, and information. And there's, again, this is...
Yeah.
Palestinian political prisoners are being locked away because Israel wants to isolate them. It wants to deny their voices and their leadership to other Palestinians and to the global movement for justice and liberation. And so by sharing the stories of Palestinian political prisoners, sharing their words, demanding their freedom, we are stopping Israel in its task of isolating these voices and these leaders.
Yeah. And Charlotte, it's worth noting also that the prison she's in now, Hasharon, and the same case with all the Israeli prisons, are all inside Israel, basically, which is really against against international law, and more specifically against the Fourth Geneva Convention, that the occupying power is not allowed to transfer prisoners to their territory. Rather, they should hold them in their own territory. Am I correct?
That's absolutely correct, and one of the ways in which this is incredibly harmful to Palestinians is that many Palestinian prisoners are denied family visits repeatedly because their family members have to receive a special security permit to enter Israel in order to visit their family member. And so we see Palestinian political prisoners. There's a woman named Rona Kadan. She's been in prison for over 2.5 years. During this time, she has had over 20 postponements of her military court hearing. She has not been convicted even in the kangaroo court of the Israeli military court. Wow. And she has been denied family visits for 2.5 years because every one of her family members that applies has been denied the special security permission to go to visit their relatives. Yeah. And this is something that we see. It's not just the collective punishment of Palestinian prisoners. Yeah. It's a collective punishment against entire families. And given how much mass incarceration is a facet of Palestinian life, this is collective punishment against Palestinian families, against Palestinian communities, against Palestinians in general. Yeah. And this is one of the really insidious ways in which this Israeli violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention is impacting Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And something else that should be noted about Hasharon prison, mm-hmm. And also about most Israeli prisons, is that the security systems in Hasharon mm-hmm. are provided by a company called G4S.
That's right.
It's the largest security corporation in the world. It actually provides security services, contracted security services at Canadian airports as well. Mm-hmm. And it's the subject of a global boycott campaign, not just for its involvement in providing security services for the prisons of torture and political imprisonment of Palestinians, but also for its involvement in deportations and deaths during deportations, human rights violations of asylum seekers in Britain and around the world.
Yeah.
And in Brazil as well, G4S is involved in human rights violations in private prisons.
There's
a growing global boycott campaign against G4S that's actually gotten them out of various universities and public spaces, particularly in Europe. So it's worth noting that this is a global corporation that's directly involved in the torture and abuse of Palestinian political prisoners, including Nina Khatab.
Yeah, and Israeli war crimes, really, basically. And they run also the checkpoint security, also, I heard. Am I correct also?
They used to have a higher level of involvement, and of course there's still their technology being used.
Yeah.
Because of the global boycott campaign, G4S has claimed to be pulling out step by step, first out of their involvement in the West Bank, and then they claim that they're not going to renew their contract with Israel Prison Services.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they could stop providing those contracts today, and they're choosing not to because they're profiteering from the occupation and abuse and torture of Palestinians. And so G4S has, been involved in all aspects of the occupation. The only time that they've, begun to not take a contract here or there is because they've actually been seeing a real economic impact on their ability to get new contracts because of how deeply they are involved and enmeshed in the violation of Palestinian rights.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to talk about other two cases specifically that Sami Doon is involved on in the, you know, and it's important to show really the cruelty of the occupation that lasted since 1967 in the West Bank. And most of these we are talking about are really being born under occupation from Lina to, you know, Malak al-Khatib, who's 14 years old. Could you tell us a bit about her case? And they released her finally, but it's heartbreaking to hear her story.
Yeah, absolutely. Malak al-Khatib was walking home one day in her village near Ramallah, actually on December 31st of last year, when she was arrested by Israeli soldiers, and she was taken, she's 14 years old. She was taken from her home, taken from her village, taken to Hasharon prison, interrogated. Her detention was, you know, first extended for 1 week, then for another week, then for another 2 weeks. Despite the repeated appeals of her family for her release, their dedication to do anything to, you know, raise any money for bail or fines that could get her out of prison, she was just kept in jail, and she was kept in jail as a 14-year-old girl in Hasharon prison, denied access to her family, denied access to her education, denied access to everything that she loves and cares for. She was eventually sentenced to 2 months in prison and a 6,000 shekel, around $1,500 fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her family is not wealthy. Yeah. You know, they gathered money to pay this fine. Yeah. And there was a really a growing international and Palestinian demand for her release, because this is a 14-year-old girl who is walking home, and on the word of Israeli soldiers, she's being sentenced and imprisoned, again accused of this ubiquitous charge of throwing stones. Malak's story, you know, and Malak's story is not... She's far from the only Palestinian child prisoner. There are hundreds of Palestinian children that get detained every month.
Yeah.
I mean, Palestinian children are held, even if it's for a day at a time, a week at a time. Mm-hmm. It's really a campaign of terror that's being waged against Palestinian children and youth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Malak was the youngest prisoner at 14, but there's another 14-year-old boy, Khaled al-Sheikh, who is still in prison now. He was arrested on December 12th last year. He still hasn't been tried. He still hasn't been charged. And he's a 14-year-old boy. When Malak was released just earlier this week, she actually went and she joined a protest. She joined a demonstration calling for Khaled's release. Defense for Children International Palestine has, you know, released reports. They've done interviews, they've done research to show just how many Palestinian children are tortured, are abused, are physically or psychologically humiliated and brutalized by Israeli soldiers in prisons and under interrogation and in detention centers. And so a call to free Palestinian child prisoners and to draw attention to the stories of Palestinian children who are being denied their education. Palestinian children who are in prison can't even take their classes. They're not given, they're denied access to education. People will frequently lose a year or more in school due to imprisonment. So this is something that's not just impacting children for the time that they're in prison, but really for their whole lives, through disrupting their education and through trauma that's being that's being imposed on Palestinian children through Israeli torture and abuse.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, imposing these heavy fines on these family is, really outrageous, because it fits in the Zionist master plan to ethnically cleanse Palestinians from their homes, because these fines, whether on prisoners or on taxes, although the tax is supposed to go to the Palestinian Authority, but they stopped doing that lately. So really, it's a part of this master plan to ethnically cleanse Palestinians and choke them economically so they leave Palestine. But they're not succeeding, I believe. They're doing it in Jerusalem more intensely. I'd like to move also to the case of Abdullah Abu Rahme. He's going to be sentenced in 3 days on the 23rd of February. Could you tell us a bit about his case? I think it relates to the five broken cameras movie that was get international.
Yes. Abdullah Abu Rahma is the coordinator of the Popular Committee Against the Wall in Bilayin. And the Popular Committee Against the Wall is known for its kind of mass, popular, nonviolent demonstrations against the apartheid wall that's been, you know, going through their village, and that's actually, you know, won victories in the campaign to push back the wall and you know, try to cut at least the amount of Palestinian agricultural land that's being stolen by the apartheid wall and the settlements. Mm-hmm. But because these protests have been growing and they garner international attention and they're building solidarity within the very agricultural villages and land that's being targeted for settlement construction and expansion and confiscation, these protests and these committees have faced significant repression from the Israeli state. And one place we're seeing that is in the case of Abdullah Abu Rahma, who is due to be sentenced on February 23rd for engaging in a popular, nonviolent protest. What he is charged with is, quote-unquote, disturbing a soldier. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the protest that was going on was disturbing to Israeli soldiers. And once again, you were reading Israeli Military Order 101 earlier. So it's the same kind of pretext that we see. The imprisonment of Lina Khatab is also the imprisonment of Abdullah Abu Rahma. Now, he is being charged with participating in demonstrations in 2005 and 2012. He had been, you know, summoned for interrogation and released, and then they brought these charges back. And it's really clearly just an attempt to disrupt organizing in Bilayin against the wall and the settlements and try to frighten people from participating in these demonstrations. Now, in Abdullah Abu Rahma's case, you know, there have been calls from Amnesty International, from other human rights organizations, but we're still seeing attempts to imprison, once again, Palestinian protest organizers for participating in a protest, mm-hmm. for saying, no, you don't have the right to steal our land, our agricultural land, and build a wall on it or give it to a settlement. And it's for this that Abdullah Abu Rahma is facing imprisonment. And we don't know what the military court is going to impose on him. You know, once again, we're talking about these military courts that are built to be an arm of the occupation and nothing more.
Yeah.
And there is an action online on the Samadun website. You can go and you can sign the action online. This is something that international human rights groups are also participating in. And so you know, encourage folks to participate in that, to really flood their mailboxes before this sentencing, to say that the world is watching, that these Palestinian leaders are not going to be isolated and imprisoned and locked away from the world.
Yeah. Also noting the International Court of Justice deemed the wall illegal and against international law. So any action against it is really legal and moral. So, you know, I'd like to just emphasize on, you know, what people can do really to support the Palestinian political prisoners, if you can wrap it up for us, and the role of the BDS movement in it.
Yes, absolutely. Well, the role of the BDS movement, I mean, the movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions is a really powerful international means of standing in support of a Palestinian call, a global Palestinian call to end complicity with the occupation, to support the fundamental rights of Palestinians. And one of the fundamental rights of Palestinians is to be free from mass incarceration and arbitrary imprisonment and the destruction of communities and the suppression of political movements through the imprisonment of thousands of political prisoners. And the campaign that I mentioned earlier against G4S is one of the biggest global campaigns specifically standing in solidarity with Palestinian political prisoners that's part of the broad movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Mm-hmm. And really getting involved in the BDS movement, like with the work that you're doing with the BDS committee in Vancouver, with the work of the Boycott Israeli Apartheid campaign, with boycott committees, with Students for Justice in Palestine or Students Against Israeli Apartheid chapters. This work is essential to ending institutional complicity with the occupation. And of course, the movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions isn't just economic boycott campaigns. It's also cultural boycott. It's also academic boycott. The Israeli state makes a point of sending, you know, so-called cultural ambassadors around the world to sell a false image of Israel to market the Israeli state at the expense of Palestinian lives, at the expense of Palestinian land, at the expense of Palestinian existence. And BDS is really one of the ways in which people around the world can and are saying, we demand to cut off this flow of money, of economic, political, military, and diplomatic support to the Israeli state. Mm-hmm. And by cutting off that support, people who get involved with the boycott movement are playing a substantive role in helping to free Palestinian political prisoners and support the Palestinian struggle for liberation, for the right of return, for freedom and liberation at all levels. And so getting involved with boycott, divestment, and sanctions is really one of the most important things that people can do globally to help support the struggle of Palestinian prisoners. And it's really important while doing BDS campaigns to raise attention to the issue of Palestinian political prisoners, mm-hmm. to say that it's this financial and political and military support that's keeping people like Nina Khatab imprisoned. And these people have a right to be free, and Palestine and its people have a right to be free. And BDS is a really critical way of supporting that movement and supporting that struggle.
For sure, it helped in the case of South Africa to hasten the collapse of apartheid. Hopefully, it'll do the same with the Israeli apartheid. Thank you, Charlotte, for being with us tonight.
That was an interview by Hannah Kawas with Charlotte Cates, coordinator of the Samadoun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, on his radio program, Voice of Palestine, out of Vancouver, British Columbia. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a segment of Truth and Justice Radio. And please join us again next week for more news and views out of Palestine. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts, and this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.